It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com lead fantasy writer Fred Zinke. A little later, we will have a guest appearance by Brandon Funston of Yahoo Fantasy. But for now, we have got a lot of stuff to talk to, so we're going to start getting right to it. And a lot of news this week. One of the first pieces of one of the biggest pieces of news is that Cody Bellinger is up. The Dodgers continue to slot in their ridiculous array of young talent, and he's the latest one to arrive. He's kind of an interesting player. He was hitting .343 before his call-up this year, but you know, kind of an interesting mix of numbers in the past because he hasn't really hit for average that much in the minors. 260, 270, 280 kind of hitter. But he also hasn't struck out a ton, and he hits for power. And I kind of wonder what to do with that because it's not like he doesn't put the bat on the ball. He just hasn't really gotten base hits. So, you know, I like the power potential a lot in that lineup. I think he's a must-add in most formats. What are your expectations for Bellinger, Fred?
Yeah, my expectations actually range wildly just because the Dodgers do have a lot of depth on their roster and they do have a lot of players injured right now. I think that the first two or three weeks will be really, really important for him. If he gets off to a solid start, you know, I could see him hitting more than 20 home runs the rest of the way and having a decent average. That being said, I don't think he's totally clear of playing time concerns just because they do have those veterans, you know, if he gets off to a slow start. But, I mean, usually when teams bring up prospects as good as Bellinger, it's to, you know, keep them up, give them a real chance, and let them spark the lineup. I'd really like to see him hit well early also and move into a premium lineup spot because he started off near the bottom of their lineup. I think those things will be real factors because you really need counting stats from him because I don't think he's going to hit 300.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is with that kind of prospect, if he's on the roster, he's going to play. You know, I don't think that Cody Bellinger is going to be on the Dodgers roster and play twice a week. I think as long as he's up, he'll play. And if in roster shuffle turns in such a way that there are not opportunities for him, he'll be sent down. So I do think the one thing is you won't really be left wondering. You won't be setting your roster saying, is he going to play or isn't he? Because if he's on the roster, I think he's going to play.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, standard theory with when these really good prospects come up, in most leagues, you know, drop the least valuable player on your roster, take a shot at the prospect. If it doesn't turn out, you can probably get that exact player back or someone who's very, very similar. You know, maybe you didn't like quite as much as the guy who you had as your last player on your roster, but someone quite similar you can probably get back in a month if things aren't working out with Bellinger.
We go to the opposite end of careers. A couple of guys who have been around a long time who are off to a bit of a scuffle. And to me, you know, two guys I see very differently. Miguel Cabrera, I personally think the time to buy low is gone. He had about nine rough games to start the year. Last nine games, he is raking again and hitting like Miguel Cabrera. If somebody is, for whatever reason, looking to move him, you should jump on that right away. But the guy I think we need to talk about is Troy Tulowitzki because, you know, I'm a little worried. I'm not sure this is that far off from what he is. You know, I think a reasonable expectation for him coming into this year was 15 to 20 home runs, and you know, he's short of that pace, but I don't think it's hard for him to get there. But he's not the 320 hitter he used to be. I don't know that it's a buy low opportunity, but I do think he's a little better than this. Where are you on Tulowitzki?
No, I think that this, yeah, short of maybe one or two homers before he went on the DL, I think this kind of is what Tulowitzki is. I mean, this is really what he's been since he joined the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Since he joined the Blue Jays, he's a 250 type hitter, 260 type hitter, and you know maybe 20 home runs across a full season. That's, I mean, it. I don't know if we can write him off as a product of Coors Field or if this is just the aging process for someone who had a lot of injuries during their 20s. But I think this is just who he is. I mean, when we did the shortstop preview way back in March, he wasn't in it as one of our top 12. I'm pretty sure he wasn't in it as one of our top 12 shortstops. If he was in it, he was at the very end. So you take away any stolen base ability, you take away the likelihood of him hitting for an average, and he's just kind of a 20-homer shortstop. So I don't think it's worth buying low for someone who has such name value. I agree with you on Cabrera, and I do think there could still be a buy-low window there with his owners where, especially maybe some who don't do a lot of research on him, where he's hitting 268, which isn't like him, and he's injured, and he's an older player now. So maybe there'll be some Cabrera owners who will say, hey, I would get out for someone. How about this? Would you trade Yoenis Cespedes for him? He got off to a really nice start this year, but everyone would have rather had Cabrera in their draft.
In an instant. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't hesitate. I would click on that, yes, before the person had a chance to reconsider.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if some owners see, whether it's Cespedes, whether it's someone like A.J. Pollock, who's off to a really nice start, and they just see kind of blah stats from Cabrera and him injured and him being in his 30s and say, oh, sure, I'll take the hot or bad and go for it. So, I mean, those are things maybe for owners who have some depth on their roster and feel like they could stash Cabrera for probably not that long, but for a little bit of time, that's worth considering.
The thing with Cespedes specifically is I don't have a whole lot more faith in his durability over the remainder of this season than I do Cabrera's.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, yeah, just because Cabrera, we've already talked about this, but we do have to get our head around that 10-day DL stint. And, you know, it makes sense for a team like the Tigers to say, you know, we're not going to push this. 10 days is not that long. It's probably 8 or 9 games, and then hopefully we have him every day from here on out rather than like the 15-day DL stint. I do think that's changed things a lot. We've already had more DL stints in April than we had all of last April.
Yep. Joey Gallo, I think he's up. I think at this point, regardless of what happens, they have to find room for him. Again, as we've talked about, I wasn't really buying into any of their other left field options as an everyday guy. He's leading the American League in home runs. To me, he's there, and if you have the chance to acquire him, I don't worry much about it. I don't think – I'll put it this way. He could play himself out of a job in 2 months, but he's not going to find himself out of a job in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the Rangers recently said that Ryan Rua is going to be their left fielder most days from now on. I don't really put a lot – once Adrian Beltre comes back, I really think Gallo gets that shot. And we don't really know when Beltre is coming back. That seems to be something that just continually is undetermined. And I've been really surprised. I guess this is a post-hype sleeper because Gallo was really hyped when he was, you know, on the verge of first coming up. In Yahoo formats, for example, he's barely owned in more than half of leagues. And this is a legit candidate to lead the American League in home runs this year. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but this is someone who, if he plays all the time, is going to probably at least be in the 30s for home runs. I mean, the batting average won't be high, but you don't leave 35 home run players on waivers. And since he has that potential, I'm really surprised there hasn't been more buzz about him and people. I think if he got off to this start the first time he was ever called up, he would have been 95% owned right now. And it is a classic post-hype sleeper where people just see Joey Gallo and say, oh, he strikes out too much, it won't work out. But there are a lot of players in baseball who strike out a lot but also hit a lot of home runs.
Yep. I know Christian Arroyo was a really well-regarded prospect. I also don't know what he does for your fantasy team in something beyond an NL-only format. There are other formats where he's worth owning, but I look at his skill set, and I see very little to get excited about from a fantasy perspective aside from playing time. Am I missing something?
No, I'm with you. I mean, this is someone who, like, it was probably more of a baseball prospect than a fantasy prospect, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. He's still only 21. I mean, I'm not writing him off in dynasty leagues. You know, he's a 300 hitter career in the minors. So, I mean, maybe high end when he hits his prime, he's a 300 hitter who can get you maybe 15 home runs and 15 steals or something like that. But I don't think that's we're anywhere close to that now. He is, to put it in perspective, he hasn't had a double digit homer or steal season since he started in the minors in 2013. So it's unrealistic, I think, to think that he could do something like that in the majors right away. And I'm not convinced necessarily that he can hit for average in the majors right away.
Jason Hayward, we buying?
I don't even know what to make of Jason Hayward. I put in our notes, like, just when we had quit on him, now he's hitting .284 and has 3 home runs in April. So now the Jason Hayward, I guess I'm buying to the point of, like, maybe If I could use a 13 or 14 homer player and a 13 or 14 steal player, so let's say something like that, 15 or almost 15 home runs, almost 15 steals and .270 average, then I'll buy him like enough to give him a shot. Do you think those are like maybe realistic expectations for him? Because it's lower than where we were at with him last year, but a lot higher probably than we were on him in March.
I think that's pretty reasonable. To me, the reason that Hayward is intriguing is the lineup. Is if he plays regularly, gets base hits, and gets on base, he's going to have runs and RBI. And that, to me, you know, this is a guy who's hit 230 and he's hit 280. I mean, there have even been good years. There have been years where Jason Hayward was a really good player where he still didn't hit for much average, and his value came from hitting home runs and drawing walks. He's always been a weird player with his sort of the way he gets to his offensive value kind of all over the place. So to me, the appeal is less the steals and the home runs, though, you know, I think there'll be some of that. I don't think there'll be a lot, though. And more, if he's playing regularly and getting hits and drawing walks, then he's going to get a lot of RBI and a lot of runs.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go back, at like last year was really, really bad by his standards. Well, by anyone's standards, but by his standards. But if you look at the years before that, he was pretty consistent, actually. I mean, inconsistent within the season, but consistent by the end with like a mid-700s or high-700s OPS with home runs between 11 and 14, you know, around 20 steals. And as you said, if you do that in a good lineup, and the batting average, you know, kind of in the 270 range some years, maybe you get a little better luck and you get up to around 290 some years, not so much, and you're down in the 250s. So, and if you do all that in a good lineup, you know, you can score and drive in plenty of runs. So I think in 10-team leagues, I'm still not really excited, but in 12-team leagues, I think that he needs to be owned.
Eric Thames keeps doing it. We keep talking about him in pretty much anybody who's talking about baseball is talking about him. To me, the difference between where he is this week and where he was last week is not that different. I buy a little more. You know, I buy into him like 3% more with each week. I think the thing to remember is what he's done is already in the bag. And so it's still a question of what he does from here out. But at this point, what caliber of player is he alongside? Who would you be looking to get if you wanted to sell high? Who would you be willing to part with if you wanted to get on board?
Yeah, I don't, man, this is, I'm not totally buying, obviously, but I am buying enough. Our StatCast department has done a really good job of showing some data on him, you know, laying off pitches outside the strike zone and having better plate discipline than he had before. So some reasons to believe that this is a different kind of hitter. If I owned kind of one of those blah first basemen, I would love to trade them, the Carlos Santanas, the Jose Abreus for him. I don't think that will cut it right now. I threw some trade options in there. I was interested to see where you would come in these. I think I would trade Matt Carpenter for him. Would you rather have Thames or Matt Carpenter the rest of the season?
I think I'd rather have Thames. I think that, you know, I just, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one. That's an interesting name. That's an interesting sort of point. You know, the thing to me about trying to trade for him is, he's another one of those guys, he was drafted in most leagues. You know, there are probably a few shallow leagues where he was picked up on waivers, but, you know, in most leagues, he was probably drafted by somebody who was excited. You know, he's one of those guys, there was some hype beforehand and people were excited. There were certainly skeptics and people who didn't buy in, but, you know, I don't think many people are going to be looking to cash him in for a safe play, for a Carpenter type. And so I think, you know, probably trades involving him are going to be creative trades. And I don't even know what that looks like. But I think that the people who have him probably are not going to be looking to move him for somebody safe. If you find somebody who's interested in doing that, I think that's a potentially good move. If you have, as you say, one of those sort of safe, low upside guys, and you want to take on the risk-reward of Thames, I think that's a deal. But I'm not sure you're going to be able to find those deals. Do you think you can?
No, not really. I think you have to go big if you want Thames. And I think if you own Thames, because you drafted him, so you made a good call, probably not quite as good as you thought. You made a better call than you thought you were making, but at least you were the one who made the good call. And I think you have to have your socks knocked off to trade him. And I also threw out the comparison of Edwin Encarnacion, who was probably a third-round pick in a lot of leagues, but is hitting .208 with three home runs. Like, if I'm the same owner, I'm not sure if I invest in. I know he drove in 127 runs last year, but I'm not sure if I could trade someone that hot for Encarnacion. And I'll even say this, from just doing all the Twitter chats and seeing just the multitude of trades that happen out there, there will be a league where he will be traded for Miguel Cabrera. I'm sure of it, where a Miguel Cabrera owner will see him as, you know, average, kind of blah so far, injured, veteran, Thames is raking, and they'll take the chance that Thames is going to hit 45 or 50 home runs this year. Like, I think that's where he is. I couldn't get myself to trade Miguel Cabrera for Eric Thames. I'm going to guess, knowing you, that I don't think you could either.
No, no chance.
No, but I do believe that the Thames owner, if he wants to jump off now, could get someone like that good, like a first three-round player who is maybe off to just a mediocre start.
And that's the kind of, you know, that's, I think, the kind of play you're looking at is, I think, again, rather than somebody else's safe play, I think maybe you might get somebody else's risk-reward play.
Yeah, that's totally true. And where else the same? Carlos Correa is another one that comes to my mind where, like, that trade is absurd in March, but he's off to not a great start. And maybe if you need a shortstop and you're the Thames owner. And the other one that I think where Thames could be traded is owners who have him weren't obviously expecting this from him and don't love their pitching staff.
Yeah.
And you can probably trade him for a legit ace right now, like whether it's a John Lester type, a DeGrom, or even maybe a little higher. So an owner like that could maybe fix their pitching staff by cashing in on someone who's probably, even if he has a great season, they've already got his best month.
We move to starting pitchers, and I'm going to throw one at you that wasn't on. It's just breaking news. Noah Syndergaard scratched with tired arm. As of now, they're saying he's going to start Sunday. We almost certainly will talk more about him next week, but we can't ignore this. I mean, we'll be brief because we just don't know much. But, you know, they initially said he was going to start Wednesday, and then they said, no, we're just going to stay on term. It's going to stay on term. It's going to be Gazelman, and we'll push Syndergaard back to Thursday. And now they're saying, no, he's not going to pitch till the weekend. Got to be a little worried, right?
Oh, absolutely, because we were a little worried at times last year. I mean, really, any time a pitcher has an injury concern in their pitching arm, we're worried. But, I mean, this is someone who throws really hard and briefly had injury concern last season. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't. It's hard to give anyone advice on what to do with them or anything right now until we hear more. I think there'll probably almost be a hold on trading him in every league. So I think you just cross your fingers and hope that this is really just a tired arm. I don't know. I don't think I would feel good even trading him away right now.
No. I'm beginning to think the hope with him is that he's just 180, 190 inning guy, that he's a guy who, they're hitters like this, who just kind of need maintenance. You just kind of assume that you're going to build in a little bit of missed time over the course of the season, that rather than anything going wrong, he's just maybe somebody who's going to need some of this. Because this is, you know, for all the alarm bells, and it's natural to worry. One of the things we know is that velocity tends to go hand in hand with injuries, that guys who have that extreme velocity get hurt. So, you know, maybe he's just a guy that is going to get dinged up sometimes, and if they're extra careful with him, maybe he's just not a 220-inning guy. Maybe they protect him enough that he's a 180-inning ace, and I could live with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that because Syndergaard in 180 innings can get as many strikeouts as most pitchers can in their 215 or 220 innings. He might not be able to get as many wins. I mean, he's still really good. That would keep him from probably ever being in the top three or four in a draft, just because if you're going to go first or second round on a pitcher, and a lot of people did on Syndergaard this year, you know, you probably want to believe you're going to get 220 innings. But you're right, he might be a guy who's just often a 180-inning guy and maybe has one year where just everything clicks and then he's overdrafted the following year. But you're right, he could be someone who just isn't, you know, who needs that maintenance during the season.
If you have Madison Bumgarner, what do you do?
Oh, he's my tout wars ace, and this is, like, this is just awful because it's not even a pitching injury. It's frustrating, but I think there's two ways you deal with Bumgarner, and it really depends on the rest of your staff. I think trading him is probably, if you can trade him and get a good pitcher for him, then by all means do it. But I don't think many teams will want to do that. I think there's one or two things you do. So if the rest of your pitching staff you're pretty comfortable with, then I would go pretty tentative in replacing him. Like, I'd go safe on matchups, one-start pitchers in weekly transaction leagues, and just hope that I get my ace back in July. If I'm feeling like the rest of my staff without him just doesn't cut it, because there are a lot of owners who went Bumgarner and then no starting pitcher for like the next eight rounds, you know, then I think you have to get a little aggressive here. Unless you're going to trade for an ace, then I think you have to get aggressive with two-start pitchers, playing some questionable matchups, jumping on some unusual, you know, some guys who have had better starts to the season. Maybe you need to trade for someone like an Irvin Santana, who you don't have to pay an ace price for, but has been pitching like an ace so far, and hope that he just keeps it going. But you might have to go a little bit of a wing and a prayer if you're a Bumgarner owner who doesn't like what he has behind him.
How shallow a league are we willing to drop Felix Hernandez in?
So I would drop Hernandez in 10-team leagues. Now, I'll fully admit I'm usually the low man lately on Hernandez. I would drop him in 10-team leagues, and I would drop him in 12-team leagues where I liked the players on my bench. And obviously, if my DL spots are full, but there have been so many disabled players that I feel like most people, their DL spots are full. So, I mean, with his velocity's down since the start of last season, he's been a really average mixed league pitcher as far as everything, ERA, whip, strikeout rate. My mind can't see a path where he comes back from this and is, like, really good this season. And, you know, maybe he could be good in a future season, but I don't know if you think I'm being too negative, but my mind does not see him coming back and throwing 92 again or figuring out a way to throw 90 and then being a really good pitcher.
And that's the thing, and I want to contrast him with the next guy that we're going to talk about, because to me that's entirely what it comes down to is if you hold and you wait, what's the upside? What's the reward that you're waiting for? And I think you hit it exactly. I don't see what the reward is that you're waiting for if you wait out Felix Hernandez. And the flip side of that is Kevin Gausman, a guy that we talked about, I think, the entirety of 2015. I think I just had a permanent entry in my notes that was like, something like, what in the world, Kevin Gausman? Mm-hmm. And he kind of seemed like he came through last year, strike out an inning, the walks were low, really looked like a nice pitcher. I bought in once again because I love the pitcher, and now he leads the American League in walks and runs allowed. But here's the thing, and here's why I have not been able to pull the trigger on dropping Gausman, even in my 10-team mixed, although I should, is the difference between him and Hernandez is the upside, is that you absolutely can see what the reward is if you hold on to Gausman. So I haven't dropped him yet, but I'm also just kind of, I have this like long-running fantasy league relationship with Kevin Gausman. Are you dropping him or holding him?
Yeah, I'm of the same mentality, to mostly hold. I mean, we talked about Jonathan Villar last week as a hitter who just everything was going the wrong way. Like, he was playing poorly and he was having bad luck when he was actually doing something right. And I think of Gausman maybe as the pitcher version of that right now, where just his BABIP's higher, like significantly higher, but he's also not pitching well. But sometimes those things can even go hand in hand, where things just, innings aren't going well for you and you're trying to do too much or whatever, and you're walking more batters. So, yeah, I think there's, I mean, he had a 3.61 ERA and, you know, basically a strikeout per inning last season. So, and he plays on a pretty good team, so with a really nice bullpen. So I can see the reasons why I would keep him. We're going to talk in a few minutes about some pitchers who are doing really well. I understand that it's hard to not drop someone with a 7.5 ERA for someone who maybe has a 1.5 or a 2 ERA so far this season, but I'd love to find a way to keep him in a lot of leagues.
And you hinted at this. Some veterans who are having nice years: Leek, Jason Vargas, Chase Anderson, Jeremy Hellickson. For the most part, I am not buying. I like Leek okay. The one guy on that list that I do kind of like is Hellickson, only because, again, I can tell you what the upside is. And the upside is that a few years ago, he was a low threes ERA kind of guy. Any of those guys you like more than I do or more than Hellickson?
No, Leek would probably be my favorite. The strikeout totals are going to be low, but so I expected Leek to be successful with the Cardinals, like, and he really wasn't last season. He had a spurt where he was fine, but I expected him to be much better. I just felt like St. Louis was a nice spot for him. I mean, the veteran club with a good catcher and a pitcher-friendly home park, and you know, usually wins plenty of games, and I felt him going from Cincinnati to St. Louis was a really nice fit. And I mean, he's going to regress from where he is right now, but I think he's someone who can be serviceable in 12 and 15 team leagues. Hellickson, I basically think of along the same lines. The strikeout rate won't be great, but I think he can be serviceable. I don't think of these guys as long-term 10-team league assets. I understand that people in 10-team leagues, like if you're the guy who has to bench Gausman, these are really interesting names to try right now just to cover yourself, you know, go with the hot hand for a few starts and see if he can keep this going. And I feel similarly with Vargas. I think Vargas, I like a little less than them, but I would start him in most leagues right now, at least until he cools off. Chase Anderson, to me, is a little bit below these guys. The home park there's not enough for some reason for me with Anderson. He hasn't really done it before for an extended period of time. He's the one I buy the least. I don't think I would even own him in a 10 or a 12-team league.
He has very consistently been exactly what he is over the course of his career. You know, sometimes a player tells us what he is. I think Chase Anderson has told us what he is.
Yeah, it's a really tough call for owners because, like, lots of times pitchers will have one good month during the season, but if that good month, we've talked about how if that good month is August, no one really notices as much as if that good month is April. That being said, when a pitcher does go out of their mind and have this one outlier year, it probably does start with a really good April. So we can't totally write these off. I get owning them, even in shallow leagues, but don't trade away your good pitchers counting on Jeremy Hellickson to be in your rotation in a 10-team league the rest of the season.
And one last thing before we move on to another topic. My worry with Mike Leake is the defense. That's a bad defensive team.
Yeah.
And he's a team that needs guys to catch the ball. The reason I don't trust him is I don't trust them to catch the ball behind him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We move to a guy who does miss bats, and that's Julio Urías getting called up, presumably to stay. They certainly can't afford to be kicking valuable starting pitching options to the curb. And the whole idea was just to kind of manage his workload. So he's pretty much here to stay. He was not doing great at AAA, but it's PCL. It's tough to pitch in. I can't imagine Urías is sitting on a waiver wire in anything but some 10-team mix, but I like Urías a lot, and I am on board. I would be looking to acquire him if somebody is sort of looking to sell. How much do you like Urías?
Yeah, I like him a lot. I agree with you. I think that this was their management plan for him, have him basically miss the first month instead of having to miss October when they'll really need him. I think his K per 9 should be higher than 9 the rest of the way. His ERA should be low. His WHIP was high last season, but I think that's something that will improve. I mean, to bring this full circle to the beginning of the podcast, I mean, I don't think we can recommend Cody Bellinger in every league and not recommend Urías in the sense of Urías is a better, probably, if he was on the prospect list still, he would be even higher than Bellinger, and he's already had major league success. So I would rather own Urías, and he's still available. I just checked while you were introing him. In 25% of Yahoo leagues, he's still available. So, I mean, I would rather have him than all of the veterans that we talked about. I think I would be really tempted to drop Kevin Gausman for him, for example. I would drop Gausman for him. I think I couldn't turn away someone who as talented as Urías, who was good last year in the majors and probably is up to stay on a good team.
Absolutely. We'll move on to closers and two-start pitchers briefly. Before we do that, I want to take a moment to tell you about the Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. If you've made it this far into our podcast, we think there's a pretty good chance you'll enjoy the Cut Forecast as well. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food, or the combination baseball hot dogs. Last week's episode featured an interview with former major leaguer Rick Ankiel about his transition from pitching to hitting and how he dealt with anxiety as a professional athlete. If that sounds like something you're into, search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts and click subscribe. I have not heard that yet. But I covered Rick Ankiel. He was very guarded early in his career, and later had an interview with him at the end of his career. Really thoughtful, interesting guy. It's very understandable why he was so guarded. He went through a whole lot, unimaginable to a lot of people, what he went through so publicly, and he's a guy I really pull for, and I am looking forward to reading his book, looking forward to hearing that podcast, because Ankiel is somebody I pull for, and again, somebody who didn't have a reputation as a great guy to deal with early in his career, but it was entirely understandable, and a really interesting guy with a lot to say.
Yeah, I mean, Cut 4, whether it's doing something funny or something serious, like, I think it's a good source of humanizing these athletes who are humans, you know, and we talk about them in fantasy as, like, assets and commodities, and I traded this guy and I own this guy, but Cut 4, usually in a fun, light, humorous way, really does humanize the professional baseball player, and that's something that every fantasy owner, I think, always needs to remember.
We will roll through closers here. We need to come up with a name for this because I feel like this is one of my guiding principles, and so I'll come up with a name for
it.
But my complete disbelief in closer by committee.
The
Phillies have said they don't have a closer. Hector Neris is the Phillies' closer and should have been all along. He's their best reliever. I think he's going to hold on to it. I am on board. Are you with me in buying him?
Yeah, I think he has the skills to hold the role. It was interesting that they briefly named Joaquin Benoit. Like just 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about Joaquin Benoit had been named their closer, and then he blew one save, and then they went to Neris. And you think, I kind of think, why would you name someone like Benoit, who has years and years of success in the majors as your closer? He has blows one save, and I think it was on a Bryce Harper home run, which is not that shocking, especially the way Harper's hitting right now. And then you switch to the other guy. Like, if you wanted Neris all along, then go with Neris all along. But, yeah, he has the skills to hold this job. I think he's the guy.
Excuse me. Cody Glover goes on the DL. Blake Treinen continues not to really have his stuff together. Sean Kelly is a pretty much must-have across the board. To me, the question is, how much do you like him? Is he somebody you're looking to acquire now that there's nobody even splitting those save chances with him on a good team?
Yeah, I've been surprised just watching the ownership percentage for Kelly that owners haven't been jumping on him. I mean, yeah, he's the full-time closer on easily one of the top 10 teams in baseball and maybe one of the top 5 teams in baseball. So, I mean, for at least for now. So he should be active in all leagues. I'm not totally sold that on August 1st, Sean Kelly's their closer. That would be the thing holding me back from, say, trading for him. He's interesting. If someone believes that he's going to be their closer all the way to the end of September, he might be a nice buy right now because you won't have to pay for him what you'd have to pay for one of the really experienced top closers. But I'm not sure that contending Nats team goes with him the rest of the way. But I think he needs to be active in every league right now.
To me, there are two specific concerns with Kelly, and you noted one of them, which is I think there's a real good chance that they go and get a guy to pitch the ninth inning and you know, overpay if they have to get a guy to pitch the ninth inning. The other thing with Kelly is that it seems to have finally come out what their hesitation to name him outright the closer was, and it wasn't any thought that he couldn't handle it. It was a health question. They really want to be careful with him. They don't want to pitch him 3 days in a row. They don't want to pitch him 4 out of 5. And so that was their issue, was there were days when they just don't want to have to use him as much as a team that wins as many games as they win is going to use its closer. So the other thing is, even if they don't trade somebody, you know, it's hard for me to see him getting 45 saves. You know, he's a guy who is probably, even on a good team, even if they don't acquire somebody, is going to be the lower end of full-time closer save totals just because he's not a guy they're going to push really hard. So, you know, that to me is as much a concern as anything.
I could see if I owned Kelly in a deeper league, like a 15-team league where closers are really valuable, I could see me trying to trade him now and going with the theory and trade talks that, you know, he is the closer on a really good team and seeing if I could get full closer value for him. If I set the over-under on him for saves the rest of this year at 20, would you take the over or the under? Because I think I might take the under just in some way he doesn't get the 20.
I think that's a pretty good number and one way or another. Like, I think that's right on. I think that's where I'd set it. But I think that there are enough ways that he falls short of that that, yeah, I think I might take the under. But I think that's a pretty good number.
Yeah.
Bud Norris, closer. What a time to be alive. There's nobody else in that bullpen right now that I'm buying in on. You like Norris enough to take a flyer?
In a 15-team league, I guess I would just roll him out 1 week at a time and just see. If that week went well and Bedrosian was still on the DL, then I'd roll him out the next week. I think in a 10- or 12-team league, I would pass. I would rather just get a better pitcher in my lineup and not get the saves. And if I need saves, I'll trade for saves, but not have to put Bud Norris in my lineup.
Are you hedging K-Rob with anybody right now?
I'm trying to figure out who I would hedge him with, and is it Justin Wilson who's left-handed? I don't see it. Like, they're both, like, he hasn't been great, but he seems to always kind of hold on to his job, and their bullpen ERA, I checked a couple days ago, was the highest in the majors. So I don't know if you see one that you would really target, but I don't see someone who's definitely going to be their next closer if he blows 3 saves next week.
That's the whole problem is the next right-hander in line is, I guess, Alex Wilson. I guess you could name the lefty, but it's pretty unusual to name a lefty or closer. So, yeah, the problem is that there's not that obvious next guy, and so it's hard to say who you pick up there. So I think you just kind of ride it out. Two start pitchers, R.A. Dickey at home for the Mets and the Cardinals, Trevor Bauer at Detroit and at the Royals, Daniel Norris, home for Cleveland at Oakland, Zach Davies at St. Louis at Pittsburgh, Wei-Yin Chen, home for the Rays and at the Mets, Jake Odorizzi at Miami, home for Toronto, Andrew Cashner at Houston and at Seattle. There's nobody I love. There's nobody I really hate. I'm kind of intrigued by Bauer. The two road starts against, you know, the Tigers are a good offense, but not a scary offense. Kind of intrigued by Odorizzi. Miami and home are good places to pitch, but there's nobody I'm rushing to get. Is there anybody you like more than I do?
No, I'd say overall this is one of my least favorite lists from all the shows that we've done. I don't love any of them. I know I agree with you on Bauer because Detroit's not at full strength right now with Cabrera out and with J.D. Martinez out. Assuming that Cabrera's still out, I haven't looked at the exact date for that start, but if Cabrera's still out, then, yeah, I think I would use Bauer. I don't mind Dickey for a couple home starts against the Mets and the Cardinals, like in deeper leagues. I'm with you on Odorizzi. I think that's fine. Toronto's lineup isn't hitting well and is banged up, and I think at Miami's reasonable. I'm not touching Cashner. Daniel Norris, I just can't get on board yet. Zach Davies, I guess in a 15-team league, I own Zach Davies in a 15-team league, and I'm on the fence for next week. Like at St. Louis, at Pittsburgh, those are two teams that haven't hit great this year, and Davies is really good this week, but prior to that, like not at all. Like this is a really risky group. I may be inclined in 10 and 12-team leagues to skip all these pitchers and just look for someone who has one really nice matchup and is a better pitcher.
I am going to wait and see what R.A. Dickey looks like in Atlanta before committing to him for two home starts. The early, completely insufficient data suggests that the ball might fly in Atlanta at the new park. And so I just think even though, yeah, the matchups might be decent,
And that is the Mets. The Mets hit home runs.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. The bust potential there is really high. Like, it is Dickey could turn in two really good starts, but, man, I will not be surprised if Dickey comes out of this week having allowed six or seven home runs, and that's scary.
So it just, I think it depends. You have to look at your whole rotation and think, do I need to risk, do I feel good enough about the rest of them to risk a two-start R.A. Dickey, or is my rotation already kind of sketchy, and maybe I should just get a better pitcher with one nice matchup?
And now is the point where I hand off. And I am really excited about who I'm handing off to here. Brandon Funston of Yahoo Fantasy is somebody I worked with 20 years ago at a company called Starwave. He has been a fantasy expert for as long as there have been fantasy experts. And I am excited to hear what he has to say. So I'm going to hand off to Fred and Brandon. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And thanks, guys, for taking the time to talk.
Okay, as Matthew said, I'm back, and I'm here with Brandon Funston from Yahoo. This is really exciting for me. Matthew was mentioning, Brandon, before you came on, Matthew was mentioning that he worked with you 20-something years ago. So I think that's an awesome awesome way of noting that you've been in this industry longer than most of us. I remember reading your work when thinking about working in the fantasy industry was like not even on my radar at the time. So thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. I know this is a busy day for you. There's apparently something called the NFL draft that's really popular to a lot of Americans today. So I'm sure that'll be busy on your plate tonight, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've got a head's kind of swimming with baseball and football, you know, cross section here. And I guess I can't say that I was barely alive 20 years ago. You guys already know me too well, I guess. So
once your work is on the internet, then there's nothing you can do to hide from when you started in the industry, I guess. It lives forever. I want to start by talking about the Yahoo leagues because we promoted them with Andy and with Scott in March. And, you know, like a lot of people listening, everyone listening has their teams, but some of their teams are probably going really well. Some of their teams are probably going really poorly. Some of them maybe find their leagues not as active as they wanted. And Yahoo leagues are still open. So, Brandon, as far as you know, is everything, you know, still available that was available in March?
Yes, as far as I know. I can't tell you when the cutoff date is, but I still think we have a decent window. It stretches, my memory serves me correctly, it'll stretch into May at least a decent amount. So I think you can do everything full-service leagues that you could, you know, prior to the season starting. I think you can still get into those. And for those struggling, I would put myself in that group. I could certainly go out and get another team and probably be a lot happier than the league that we're playing in together, the Yahoo Friends and Family League.
Now, my friends and family team on the surface is doing well, and overall they're doing well. That being said, I think I've mismanaged a portion of the strategy in that league. So, and I didn't have this on the script, but I did want to talk to you about this because you've done this format a lot more than I have with the innings cap. And I'm pretty sure if I work out my pace, I'm going to go over my innings cap, which is one of the reasons my team's doing well, obviously, because I've used more innings. Is that something you really carefully manage in those Yahoo formats?
Yeah, you have to. It's pretty easy to go over. If you're a regular streamer, then you're gonna cruise right by it, or you're gonna run up right against it. So that's why the guys that the high strikeout guy aces are. You might go a little bit earlier than in a normal uncapped league, and even you get the high K middle relievers guys like Andrew Miller, even Chris Davinsky. They're everybody's valued for their strikeout upside, because you're just trying to maximize and get as many strikeouts as you can under that, what we have, 1,400 innings limit there. So, yeah, it's definitely something you have to be mindful of. You can't just be kind of willy-nilly with your streaming and say, oh, I like this guy, I think I'll throw him in there. You got to really say, okay, is he going to help me maximize my strikeout potential? So it's something you got to think about a lot.
Yeah, I will feel foolish, and I mean, I haven't done this format really before, so I'll cut myself some slack, but I will feel foolish if in the middle of September, I have really, like, Dallas Keuchel type who are pitching really well, and I just can't use their start because I run in innings, or I have closers getting saved, so it's something I'm going to have to watch and manage. But it is hard to resist if you haven't played in that format before. It's hard to resist. You see a really nice matchup, and you think, oh, yeah, I'm going to use that. And I guess it's all good as long as your ratio – it's okay overall as long as your ratios are low. I mean, even if you run out of innings, your ratios are going to stay low. They're not going to move at that point. But, yeah, I worry about having a false sense of security in wins and saves and strikeouts if I run out of innings. So I'm enjoying playing with that now as we get to go through. I find it's not as big of a concern with the hitters and running out of max games per hitting spot because everybody takes days off. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, and that's the tough part of this league. 14 teams, and the hitters available on the wire are hot garbage usually.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just awful. I mean, my bench is loaded up with minor league guys that I'm hoping get called up because there's just so much more excitement in what the potential they could bring versus what is available right now. So your hitters take days off, and a lot of times it's not worth replacing because, your replacements are just not very good options. So sometimes you just have to, as you said, it is a lot harder to kind of maximize out your games played on the hitter side.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to jump around now on our script for this, and because you gave me a nice segue to those prospects that you're stashing. So you're stashing Yoan Moncada and Bradley Zimmer, and, I mean, Moncada is being stashed in a lot of leagues. So first question I have for you is on Moncada. If you had to guess, I've always been kind of late May, early June on him. Like, is that what you're feeling, or do you think it could be sooner than that or later?
No, I think it's definitely, all about Super 2 and getting clear of that. And so I think there'll be no reason why he'll be down there past, like, probably the first week of June. So I'm with you on that 100%.
And then with Zimmer, I've got a harder time nailing
Zimmer
that
may
one
not
down.
Be a... Zimmer may not be on my team by the end of this conversation. I was excited about him. I saw he'd been working on a swing to cut down on strikeouts, make a little bit more contact. Looked like it was going in the right direction, but he's just following him in the minors. He's starting to struggle with that again. So I'll probably be cutting him loose shortly. I just picked up Cody Bellinger. But this is the kind of league where, you see the news that Jock Peterson's dealing with a sore hammy or groin or whatever it is, and my first thought is, might as well roll the dice on Bellinger, and sure enough, he ends up getting called up like a day later. So, Cody Bellinger is the other guy I have there, and like I said, I'll probably cut Zimmer loose, but I think I'll hang on to Bellinger and see how things progress with him.
Yeah, that's the other aspect of the league that I found challenging because most of my leagues are weekly transactions, especially the FAB. And, when I hear that Jock Peterson's, injured, my first thought is, putting him on the injury report and maybe writing something about him. And then my brain later will think, oh, this could be an opportunity for Cody Bellinger. I'll check on friends and family. He's already owned, of course, right? And that's happened to me
right,
a few times.
Yeah.
It's your closer information. And you really do, in that format, you have to even start thinking ahead, who could be the next closer up or the next prospect up. So stashing them is a good idea. I want to talk about Xander Bogaerts. That was one of the most interesting picks in our draft. And I'd say Bogaerts hasn't done anything to really be really good or bad so far this season. You took him ahead of Corey Seager and ahead of Francisco Lindor. Are you still feeling just as bullish on him?
Well, I just think he's just a natural hitter. Like, I feel like in that offense and just the way he's progressed, that I was looking at a guy I felt very assured that he's going to probably hit 300, if not 300, then right around there. He's basically done that the last 2 years. And so encouraged by the 21 home runs, I think last year, I see a guy that's still young and, you know, I'm thinking mid-20s home runs. But then what got me kind of interested was him talking about, you know, wanting to run more this year and maybe with Big Poppy gone, that there would be some more opportunities to do that. And, you know, I think he even said something like 20 steals was a target, something along those lines. So started thinking about a guy that could potentially be 20-20 and hit 300 in the middle of a great Boston lineup. And to be honest with you, I'm like Seager, Lindor, I had those guys on my rankings, overall rankings. I mean, they're literally right behind him, and it's, you know, I would say it's probably a razor thin margin on my rankings of how I viewed those guys. So it wouldn't have been like if Bogaerts wasn't, I had my choice of all of them, but I would have been happy with any of them.
Yeah, and I mean, Bogaerts hitting 311, as long as he keeps hitting 300, the rest of it will come in that lineup, right? Like, he's going to hit,
right.
He isn't hitting for power yet, but it's going to happen, and, you know, the rest of it will come. Carlos Martinez. So Matthew and I talked about Carlos Martinez right after his first start of the season when he looked awesome and then hasn't looked as awesome since. Is he someone who had projected as maybe becoming an ace this season, and do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I think it's still the potential that you love the strikeout rate. And I just, he's one of those guys, you just watch him and it's easy to fall in love with him. His stuff just is crazy good. And I kind of felt like last year, you know, the last couple of years, it's been borderline ace-like, you know, and it was another guy like Bogaerts where you just see him maybe just taking that next step and truly coming into his own. And I still think there's potential there unless we don't know about some health issue that he's dealing with. But, you know, he's had a couple games already this year, I think, where he struck out 10 or more batters. I just think he'll settle in. I don't know if he'll quite end up being the value of where I drafted him. That maybe he's more of basically the guy we've seen the last couple of years, where you can get like a low 3 ERA and you know, upper, you know, hopefully something close to 200 strikeouts. But I was hoping for maybe something special this year. It's definitely early. Could still happen.
Could still happen.
I think he's got all the talent to do it. So, and I love, you know, you love pitchers in St. Louis. They always seem to get to maximize their pitchers there. So we'll see.
Now, someone who has been pretty exciting at times is Michael Pineda, and he's someone that you drafted later on. Do you think this could be the breakout Michael Pineda season?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's weird. He had, what was his ERA last year, like 5-something? But I mean, you look at all the, you know, all the under-the-hood stats and stuff like that, and here's a guy, he had over 200 strikeouts, and he just kind of feel like, you know, he's another guy where it doesn't seem like the stars have ever aligned for him. And you know, right now he's got 29 Ks and 3 walks. So things are going in the right direction so far. And he's certainly another guy with has the stuff to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's looking back to draft season, he's that interesting guy, to type of pitcher to take in the second half of drafts where he can be really special. You know what I mean? And if he's not,
yeah,
then you can jump off and look. And look, especially as you were mentioning, in a league like ours where there are starting pitchers on waivers and you can stream pitchers if you need to, I think looking back on it, he is a more attractive option than, you know, the Marcus Stroman types who, you know, probably
right,
less downside than Pineda, but with their strikeout rate just can't really be that dominant. So,
yep, exactly.
Yeah. Trevor Story, someone who I was pretty high on going into the season, with where I was drafting in that league, he just wasn't really a fit for me. I was near the beginning of the draft, and you were later in the draft order. You ended up with him, I think, in round 3. He's not off to a good start. It hasn't been, like, all bad. He's hitting for some power, but a ton of fly balls. Like, are you feeling, I guess, two different things with him. Like, are you feeling like he is the 35 homer type guy, and are you feeling like he can at least put a respectable batting average with that?
Well, that's what I'm worried about a little bit. I mean, I think the home run the power's legit. And he's got four home runs. He's starting to wake up a little bit after a slow start. But you worry about the contact issues, really kind of dragging down his batting average. You know, last year hit .272. You can live with that all day long. But there is the worry there that you could end up with something .240 or lower as well. And certainly playing in Coors Field should help him out a bit, like it does everybody else. But the contact issues are always something you worry about, but I don't worry about his power. I think the power will show in the end. It'll be just fine, but there is a pretty big question mark given his contact issues as far as his batting average upside.
Yeah, he definitely is an interesting buy low right now for owners maybe who are behind in their power numbers. I haven't been able to convince myself to kind of go all in and say to owners, like, because he's hitting so many fly balls, I haven't been able to go in all in and say to owners, just, you know, buy low on him in every league, buy low on him in every situation, because he's going to come around and be awesome. But, like, well, we saw it last season, and, I mean, he still has a few home runs this year, and he's a Coors Field hitter. So there's still elite potential there. And the last name I wanted to mention and talk about a little bit was Devin Travis. Now, he's really fared poorly so far this season. That being said, a lot of the underlying statistics will show that he's one of the more unlucky hitters in baseball this year. Do you think, is he someone that you're okay, he's going to be part of my team all year, or could you, there's not much on waivers, or could you see a scenario where he isn't?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it. I mean, there's literally nothing on waivers. So in a typical 12-team mixer, he may not be a guy that you can really afford to have a super long leash with, but I have to have a long leash with him just because of the state of our league. He had 162 games or 161 games coming into the year where he maintained a .300 average. I think he had mid-teens home runs overall. It's not a huge upside kind of guy, but you just like him. He's just a solid hitter. I think, as you mentioned, he's just been unlucky, off to a slow start. I don't think that lasts for too long, but the thing about Devin Travis is in standard mixers, he doesn't run. He's not going to really move the needle in power. So you're just hoping that he hits at the top of the lineup, scores a bunch of runs, and continues to hit around .300. That's what I was basically going for. And as we said, he's off to a slow start. It's been unlucky, but hopefully he gets back to doing that. But not a huge difference maker kind of guy in fantasy, though.
Yeah, but it's true. And it is a lineup that could look very different in a couple of weeks if he starts hitting well and Josh Donaldson comes back and maybe he's back in the leadoff spot in front of Donaldson. That's what you're really, as you said, that's what you're really hoping for.
Exactly.
I'm going to let Brandon get back to getting ready for this draft. I will tell you, and I've never talked football on this podcast before and probably never will again, but I will say, and hopefully that we don't lose all our subscribers for this, but I'm a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan. And means that draft night is the best night of the year for me by default, right? It's the best night of the year for a Browns fan by default because it's the only night where you're in a good position, and really after that, everything just goes downhill. So I'm hoping.
So where do you lean? Who do you want? You want the quarterback, or do you want Myles Garrett from Texas A&M?
I think I want Myles Garrett, and I want them to not. If a quarterback falls to 12, that's fine, but I don't think I would trade up for any of the quarterback. I wouldn't mind Myles Garrett one more year of misery, because there's been so many, I've lost count, and then the next year's quarterback class, which is supposed to be really good, then maybe they can cash in on that. But which means that what's going to happen
that's the smarter play for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I always say the movie Draft Day would be the story of the Cleveland Browns if they had just cut the movie about 30 minutes earlier, to the point where Kevin Costner had messed up everything and everything was hopeless. If they just ended the movie right then, that is the exact history of the Cleveland Browns. But then they did that other 30 minutes to give all Browns fans hope.
Yeah, there you go. There's no happy Hollywood ending in Cleveland, unfortunately.
Yeah, not so far. Maybe someday. Anyways, thanks to you, Brandon, for coming on. We're going to keep meeting up with you and other Yahoo writers regularly this season. So in the words of Matthew, thanks, Brandon. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Matthew. Thanks, Brandon, for taking the time to talk.